bots a good home, and then if the worst happens, we've got most of what we came for.
Bots were tiny targets. They could hover offshore and avoid a Chimera's attention where even a small boat couldn't. Op Leveler was not going to be marked failed, not on Hoffman's watch.
Roger that, Cleaner. Just don't be a complete gung-ho pillock this time, will you?
Hoffman took that as Michelson's wish for good luck.
I'll try, he said. Timu, set the bots to free-fly and hold at this location.
He scribbled the grid ref on the back of Timio's glove.
Do it now.
Great timing, sir.
Just do it.
He trusted Timio, but he still watched, knee-deep in the surf, as the bots folded arms and probes into their housings and maneuvered on jets of vapor before streaking out into the darkness.
6 minutes.
Evo was in Benjafield's Marlin, bound and gagged, and Betris and Moirig's daughter were in Cho's, just in case only one boat made it. Cross-loading cargo was always a sensible precaution. Dom pushed Benjafield's boat out into the surf with Hoffman. Hoffman could hear helicopters again. He knew he couldn't rely on C Company coming to the rescue with a well-aimed salvo. They were in enough trouble themselves. Dom's brother's out there. He must be going crazy with worry.
"Everybody in!" Benjafield yelled. "Sir, we've got room for a few civvies in each boat now that all the ordnance is gone."
"Negative, Private. This isn't a rescue."
Hoffman heaved himself into the Marlin. He could see most of the ASFO staff shambling along the shore now, looking back at the facility as if they didn't believe that it was about to blow, but every time there was an explosion in the distance, they dropped flat for cover instead of running.
"Boktai, get your ass in this boat!"
Benjafield, hand on the wheel at the stern of the Marlin, gave Hoffman that look, the look that said it didn't have to be that way, and it hurt.
"Screw it, Benjafield. Who do we take with us, then? You want to choose? We can't take them all. These are assets. You want to pick the smartest ones, the prettiest ones, or the most desperate ones?"
"You're leaving it to me, sir?" He turned.
Dom, grab some civvies. First six will come with us right now."
He turned back to Hoffman.
"If it doesn't matter, sir, we'll take the willing."
Bai Tok waded out to Cho's boat.
"I go with Cho," he called to Hoffman.
Morgan and Timiu were carrying wounded Pisangas on their backs.
"Shim and Lao En need medical aid, too. I do that."
"Okay, Sergeant. No bastards listening to me today. Timiu, are those bots away?"
"They are, sir."
Dom didn't seem to have any trouble finding six passengers. Two women and four men edged down the shore, clearly nervous of the water, but Dom and a Pisanga ran out of patience and grabbed them like luggage, almost throwing them into the boats.
5 minutes.
Hoffman reached out to haul Dom inboard, then slapped Benjafield on the back.
"Get going!"
The Marlin roared away from the shore. Hoffman looked back at the other boat now closing the gap with them. They were 100 meters clear.
"Cleaner to Pomeroy. Bots are away, and we're clear of the blast zone."
Poor Stroud. But she was always going to go out that way.
And so will we. "Pomeroy to Cleaner. Roger that."
The sound of rotors was getting closer. Hoffman kept his NV goggles down and rested his Lancer on the gunwale. He looked around the faces of the men in his boat, and bar a couple of the Pisangas. They were all such kids. Little boys, unlined faces, lives not even begun yet. And that got to him like it never had before. Dom began taking off his armor.
"Private, what the hell are you doing?"
Dom kept looking out to sea.
"Try swimming in this shit, sir."
"That'll be the last of your problems if you get hit."
"Chimera guns can punch clean through this anyway."
Nobody else followed suit. But then choosing the best way to die was a very personal matter. Hoffman was watching the shore now, checking his watch. And right on time, Aspho Point blew. It wasn't one glorious movie scene explosion. It was a neat series of staccato detonations, right to left, like a giant burst of automatic fire along the beach. The flames lit up the water for a good distance. Hoffman saw nobody on the shore, and stopped, thinking if he'd done right or not, and then died down very fast, settling into something that looked like a factory fire.
"Claim that on your insurance, Indy boys," Timio said. That got a laugh, but it was short-lived. The rotor noise was suddenly much louder and close enough to tell that it was moving across their bows to port. They saw the sea around them whipped up by the downdraft even before they could pick out the shape of the Chimera. Then it was almost above them, green-lit and filling the sky. Benjafield pushed the throttle as far forward as he could and tried to steer clear.
"It's okay," Dom said, for no apparent reason. "It's going to be okay."
The bright spotlight stabbed through the darkness and circled on the waves as if searching.
"Yes, we got the bots away, assholes."
Hoffman wondered what they'd do with the seconds they'd bought.
"Joe! Joe, get away! Run for it!"
There's more than one Chimera. It's just a gesture. But it's still better than sitting here and making it simple for them. The beam fell straight down on the Marlin. Spray kicked up everywhere. Hoffman couldn't hear a thing now except the throbbing engine shaking right above him. He leaned back and aimed his Lancer anyway, because even a Chimera had vulnerabilities at that range.
"Sorry, Dom, what with the new baby and everything."
Across the water, closer than Hoffman had thought, the other Marlin was caught in the sweep of a light, too. The pilot was looking for something. He didn't need a searchlight to aim. Then gunfire hit the sea, carving across the space between the two Marlins. Cho's boat was hit. Hoffman saw the explosion of splintering composite, but the Marlin was still afloat.
"You bastards!" Dom was yelling.
He opened fire, aiming up into the belly of the nearest Chimera.
"You bastards! They're your own fucking civvies!"
But that was the whole point. Hoffman saw that now. And there I was, worrying about whether it was moral to shoot enemy scientists or not. Die moral. Big comfort. Dom emptied the clip and reloaded. Hoffman and Timiu joined him. The searchlight veered off sharply. Hoffman heard the engine stutter, and then he could smell fuel. He felt something oily and pungent spray his face. Fuel, transmission fluid, whatever, flammable.
"Shit, we're gonna burn to death at frigging sea," Dom said.
Timiu kept firing in bursts.
"We hit the asshole."
Hoffman saw the Chimera was circling, getting lower, and then it belly-flopped onto the sea 100 meters away in a textbook ditch. All he could think of doing was firing on it, reloading and firing again. The side hatch was open. If his boys were going to drown, then so was the Chimera crew, and the Fellowship of Survival could go ram itself up the nearest pipe. He couldn't even think about Cho's boat. He knew he ought to. The other Chimera broke off the attack and hovered above its stricken sister. It was amazing how suicidal all rotary pilots seemed to be.
"I'm gonna die. Shit."
"Cho!"
Dom yelled. He dropped his Lancer, kicked off his boots, and the last thing Hoffman saw was him disappearing over the gunwale into the black ink ocean around them. Chapter 17.
I couldn't just sit there and watch them die.
Private Dom Santiago, Commando Detachment 26RTI, from the official report on Operation Leveler. Aspho Fields, 2 minutes after the destruction of Aspho Point. The pyrotechnics should have marked the end of the op and the beginning of the extraction, but Parasva hadn't been destroyed, and it looked like the raid had hit trouble.
"What the hell's that?"
Carlos could see a helicopter out to sea with a fierce beam of light playing beneath it.
What are they looking for?
Dom. Dom's out there.
Nothing you can do, Marcus said. Where's our air support? They need to take out that asp.
Kelowna Control, please advise on progress of petrels, Mataki said.
Her tone was abnormally gentle. Anya was still on watch. Carlos marveled at the capacity of anyone to go easy on urgent requests, because yelling might upset a bereaved CIC controller.
We need that asp shut down. Also advise on medevac ETA.
Whoomp.
Mataki's voice stopped dead. A fresh wave of mortar fire started up, and it was falling on her position. There was a pause that felt like eternity, and then she spoke again.
I say again, I have 26 casualties. I have 3 heavies in position to defend the LZ. Long stop 2. Merritt has launched all 6 remaining petrels. They've encountered an Austri squadron off the coast and are engaging.
Anya was carrying on too. She sounded distracted, but she wasn't slowing down.
Would I handle it that well? Would any of us? Sea Ravens are going to attempt a landing. They're 5 minutes inbound. It's going to take more than 2 drops, you understand that, yes?
There was only so much room on the deck of a Raven, and with the space and kit required to deal with the most urgent injuries, that meant a lot of gears waiting on the beach for the next lift.
Sarge, they're on the move, Jakov said suddenly. The Asp is heading back onto the road.
It was too much to expect it to be pulling out. Carlos scoped through and spotted it moving. It was making for the concrete road across Asfo Fields that linked Asfo Point with the world beyond, a single service road that sat like a raft on top of the soft ground.
It's a bit late to reinforce the facility, Jakov said. I'd say it wants a better angle on the LZ. Maybe it's on the limit of its range. Or it's been called to back up whatever's going on offshore.
That alone was enough for Carlos.
Let's stop the bastard from crossing. Come on, Jax. Your guy's up for it?
You bet, Jakov said.
Don't go racing off half-assed.
Marcus grabbed Carlos's arm so hard it hurt.
Think this through. I can get out across the bridge and take it down.
Like Stroud, you mean?
Carlos was already up and moving for the bridge.
We're down to minutes. Just do it.
Santiago, no heroics, Mataki snapped.
The net went quiet. It sounded as if she'd blocked their direct link to Kelowna. No, she wouldn't want the chaos being heard by the officers. That was Bernie Mataki all over, sorted out inside the tent, so the brass thought it was all seamless and perfect even now.
Listen to Corporal Phoenix. That's an order. And I don't say that too often. What have you got left?
Jakov's buddy Marison assembled an assortment of rounds and ordnance.
Stomper and a few gut punchers.
They were less effective than missiles, but did a good job at close range.
If we get close enough, that's our best chance.
Do it, said Mataki, but stand off at maximum range.
There was another rapid succession of whoomp, 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 more mortars hitting her position. She paused and then resumed as if nothing had happened.
Because we won't be able to retrieve you. Use your head. Listen to Phoenix and do what you've been drilled to do.
Sarge, we're going to engage the Asp before it gets to the bridge, Marcus said. 30 meters, 1 gut puncher from each side simultaneously. If that doesn't fully penetrate the troop compartment, it could still put it out of action.
Go, said Mataki.
The Asp wasn't moving fast, giving the impression that it was wandering around to avoid presenting a stationary target rather than going anywhere. But it rumbled over the uneven ground on its tracks and climbed onto the roadway. All the gears could do was jump into the channels and head for the bridge. It was heavy going, but it enabled them to move unseen if they kept their heads down. Once under the bridge, Carlos scrambled up into the grasses that provided some cover on both sides, and ran at a crouch to the left with Jakovs and one of his team, Hernan. Marcus vanished into the grass on the right with Marison. They had a couple of minutes to set up. Gut punchers could be fired from lancers with attachments, and at this range it didn't matter if they weren't calibrated. The armor-piercing rounds would smash into the sides of the Asp. They couldn't miss. The two teams were 30 meters off the road, about 50 meters into Aspho Fields.
"Here it comes," Marcus said. "Wait. On my mark."
The Asp was now sharp and vivid in Carlos's NV goggles, every detail resolving out of the green blur, from the rivets in the blast plate over the letterbox slit of a windshield to the regimental identification stenciled on its nose. He could even see a head, a rounded helmet and a pair of goggles just visible above the partly open top hatch. Now he could see it quarter on, the rims of the wheels inside the track, the indentations on the track plates, the long black gouge in the side.
"Three," said Marcus. "Two. Fire."
They opened up. Carlos saw a ball of smoke and light. The loud bang didn't sound like a detonation, but the gut punchers did what it said on the label. A ragged, depressed hole was punched clean through the side plating. The Asp swerved, the top hatch clanged shut, and it ended up with one track off the road surface. But it was still making for the bridge. It righted itself. Some bastard was alive inside.
"Shit," said Marcus.
Carlos sprang up instinctively and ran for the bridge, with some crazy thought in his head that he could reload as he ran, drop back into the channel just a meter or so below the bridge, up to his knees, easy, so easy, and put another gut puncher up through the floor pan from the side. He heard Marcus yell at him to get back. When he stopped to turn, he saw Jakovs and Hernan racing after him. They'd simply reacted. Carlos had a plan. He looked as if he had a plan. He was the kind of guy people followed. But he realized it wasn't a smart plan at all. Fire opened up from the right just as he looked back. Both Jakovs and Hernan were hit again and again. Hernan fell hard on the concrete, and Jakovs, still standing, tried to stoop to grab him and was hit 3 more times. Then Carlos felt something hit him so hard in the top of the leg that he lost his balance. He'd been hit once before, in the back of the hand. He knew what a bullet felt like, a hammer blow that didn't actually feel as if it had penetrated. But this was deep, and he knew right away that this was different. His first thought was to roll clear. He fell anyway, toppling into the shallow, muddy water.
"Three men down!"
Marcus was suddenly not Marcus, not silent and battened down Marcus, but a stranger bellowing,
"Carlos! Carlos, hang on! Where are you, buddy? Where are you?"
"Who's down?"
Mataki's voice demanded.
"I'm not dead. I'm not dead. I'll walk away from this somehow."
It didn't hurt that much. It couldn't be serious. Carlos was numb, if anything. It was a miserable, cold night.
"I jumped clear," he called. "I'm fine, Marcus. Get down."
"I'm taking it,"
Marcus said, not making sense. Mataki came on the radio again.
"Who's down?"
Carlos heard a scrape of metal, then single muffled shots. Marcus grunted with effort.
"I've got the Asp," Marcus said. "I'm in."
"What do you mean, in?"
"I'm in the Asp, and it's drivable."
"Holy shit, Phoenix," Mataki said. "Can you fire?"
The engine was still running. Carlos could hear it even above the constant rattle of fire. He managed to haul himself onto the side of the channel by clinging onto the sedges, and got his eyes just level with the flat slab of bridge. It didn't even have safety rails. The Asp backed up and swung around to face into Aspho Fields again. Carlos could see it trundling toward the Austri line. For some reason, nobody seemed to react to it. Maybe they thought some of the crew had survived the attack and were withdrawing. Their radios had to be down. Or maybe they were just as confused as everyone else.
Shit. I feel tired.
Carlos could see Jakov's and Hernan's bodies on the road. He couldn't see Marison, but he obviously wasn't still with Marcus.
Shock. Guilt. Fear. For Marcus. Fear for Dom. For himself.
Carlos didn't know what came next. His thoughts were an annoying interruption to a screaming, silent voice in his head that said, "Get the hell out! You're hit! You're in a bad way! You gotta do something fast, you fool!" The Asp slowed and stopped.
Damn, it was getting cold out here.
Carlos folded his arms on the bridge to support his weight. He could feel a raw, oddly distant pain from his hips to his knees.
That was good, right? If he was in pain and awake, it wasn't that bad.
He looked down to see where he'd been hit. It was only then that he realized he could see things he didn't recognize. In the green NV image, his pants looked wet, but he knew what guts looked like. And now he could see his own. For a moment it seemed unreal, that he'd made some kind of mistake. And then he realized he hadn't.
Shit, shit, shit. I can do this. Guys get shot up like this all the time. Keep cool, just pack some dressings in.
Somehow it wasn't happening to him. He was just observing. But he had to move. He was about to heave himself out of the channel when the explosion started. By the time he dragged himself onto dry ground and found his legs weren't working, Aspho Fields was in turmoil as an Austri Asp hammered its own armor-piercing rounds into LAVs and fired on its own troops. Marcus was charging deep into enemy lines in a shot-up fighting vehicle with probably no way back.
You promised. You promised you'd play it sensible, Marcus.
Carlos now lay panting on the bridge, unable to move. He couldn't even reach his belt to pull out any dressings. All he could think at that moment was seeing a 10-year-old Marcus come out swinging and land a punch on a bully. A punch that nobody expected.
Sarge!
Carlos managed to press his radio.
Sarge, I'm gonna lay up here for a while and keep an eye on Marcus.
Offshore, less than a kilometer from Aspho Point. The Chimera didn't matter a damn. It really didn't. Dom thrashed in the sea, trying to keep his head up. He was gonna drown long before a door gunner got him. But all he could focus on now was the Marlin taking on water, Morgan bobbing face down on the waves, Young slumped over the gunwale, Cho trying desperately to bail out. Two of the scientists were struggling and screaming. They wouldn't be able to swim when the Marlin went down, as it surely would. They were still handcuffed. One of the six civvies who'd boarded at the last minute was trying to free her colleagues. She'd ripped off the tape gags, but the plastic wrist ties were impossible. She didn't have a knife.
I got one. I got a knife.
Dom managed to get a grip on one of the rigid seats and fell into the Marlin. It never occurred to him to do anything else but what he was doing now, pulling out his fighting knife and cutting the plastic ties. In the darkness, the prisoners couldn't see what the hell was happening, but Dom could, even with water leaking behind his NV goggles. Some of the civilians in Pisang troops were already dead, riddled with rounds that had ripped through the Marlin's hull, and on the deck, at the lowest point of the hull, Betris was face down in water that was flooding in. Moirig's daughter—shit, he didn't even know her first name—was struggling to keep her head above it. He hauled both of them into a sitting position, but it looked too late for Betris.
You could never tell, not with drowning. But how the fuck are we going to resuscitate anyone here, anyway?
Dom, look!
Bai Tak was in the water, gesturing wildly behind him as he clung to the boat.
Move them across!
Dom looked around just as Benjafield brought the other Marlin alongside. The Chimera was around somewhere, he could hear it, but it wasn't bothering them right then, and that was all that mattered. Hoffman reached over the side and tried to get a line on Morgan, while Dom lifted Young and slid him across the gunwale, boat to boat, so that Timiu could drag him inboard. But there were only so many extra bodies a Marlin could take before it was too low in the water to be stable. Now Dom had the terrible choice of who he could save and not save. There was no Raven coming to winch them to safety. They were on their own.
Five! Hoffman yelled. Five inboard! The rest can hang on outboard and hope for the best. Pisanga's first. My men first.
Dom hadn't a clue what the next 5 minutes would bring. All he knew was that he couldn't stop moving, that he had to grab every single chance to stop people from drowning before the Chimera came back and machine-gunned them all.
We're fine, Bai Tak shouted. Take the civvies.
There were five of them. Something in Dom clicked and made decisions without debate or conscious deliberation. Betras. Too late. He had no time to check for a faint pulse or pump chests or any of that shit. Moirig. Alive, but she could wait. He pulled off the gag and cut the ties. Cho, Sim, and Lao En were wounded. Not urgent, but a priority. He held on to the other Marlin's rope while Hoffman and Timiu pulled bodies across, dangerously close to capsizing themselves.
Bai Tak, come on! Hoffman yelled.
You move others! This thing's sinking fast!
2 minutes, maybe five, in the water in this weather before hypothermia sets in. Dom couldn't leave anyone. He realized he was crazy, and that any sane man would have taken the chance to get the other Marlin away as fast as possible, but Benjafield and Hoffman had to be as crazy as he was, because they were trying to rescue people, too. The Marlin was taking on water so fast now that Dom could only think of one thing. He had to make sure everyone kept with the other boat. As the vessel sank beneath him and he found himself treading water, he hauled whoever was still afloat to the Marlin and placed their hands on the hull.
"Just hang on there," he said. "Hang on."
He could barely see now. Water beaded the inside of his goggles, forcing him to push them up on his forehead. Hoffman reached down and grabbed his collar.
"Enough, Santiago, in you come."
Dom wasn't even sure how many people he was supposed to have rounded up. He knew he'd lost some. It devastated him. It wasn't that he felt he owed the indie scientists a damn thing, but he imagined for a moment sinking helplessly under the sea in the cold blackness, and the thought was overwhelming.
"I can't," he said.
He really couldn't grasp Hoffman's outstretched arm, and he had no strength left in his grip. He wasn't a great swimmer at the best of times, and now he began wondering what the hell he was doing in the water at all.
"I'm okay, just let me float." "You get in," said Bai Tak.
The sergeant was bobbing beside him. He gave Dom a shove.
"Get your ass in, Dom. You got babies to worry about."
Dom fell into the Marlin head first. When he scrambled upright, hands numb with cold, the Chimera lifted from a hover just above the sea and swung about. It must have rescued the crew of the other helicopter or given up on them. But now it was heading back their way. Dom grabbed a lancer from the deck. It was the dumbest and most desperate thing he'd done on a day that was turning out to be all dumb desperation. But he waited until the Chimera came within range. It kept its height. It wasn't going to suffer the same fate as its sister. And then it opened fire. Malcolm Benjafield, standing at the wheel of the Marlin a meter from Dom, was hit in the chest and face, and was thrown into the sea. Dom felt rounds punched through the hull. If the burst hit anyone else, he didn't know, and all he could do was fire back. He wasn't the only one returning fire. He was pretty sure that Timiu and one of the Pisangas were giving it all they had, too. The Chimera suddenly climbed and banked sharply, and for a moment Dom had the idea that they'd driven it off. But it wasn't the Lancer fire that was scaring the shit out of the crew. The Chimera was a couple of hundred meters away when something whooshed overhead, trailing a small wake of smoke and flame, and hit the helicopter in the tail section.
"Shit!" Timiu said.
Dom ducked as the ball of flame seemed to roll over them. But it didn't, and debris fell into the sea a long way from the Marlin. They were in instant darkness again, a long way from shore, and Dom felt the water rising over his ankles. Now this Marlin was sinking, too.
All that for nothing.
No, I'm not giving up. Not now.
Bastards!
Not after all that.
By Tuck!
Hoffman was bent over the gunwale, yelling into the darkness.
By Tuck! By!
He knelt in the bow with his lancer, searching through the scope. Eventually he lowered the rifle and started punching the shit out of the Marlin in complete silence. Timiu was on the radio calling Pomeroy for rescue.
"Pomeroy Control says the bots have been recovered," he said.
"Who fucking Ray?" said Dom.
"We're not done yet," Hoffman said. "Bye! Bye!"
Timiu went back to the radio. They'd sink before anyone got to them. They'd sink before they could move a couple of hundred meters. Dom went on autopilot again and checked who was wearing life jackets. All they could do was stay afloat in a group and hope Pom found them before another Chimera came back to finish the job.
"Where did that missile come from, anyway?"
Dom asked. He wasn't thinking fast. The cold was slowing him down.
"No frigging ravens out here."
Timiu paused to check with Pomeroy.
"From the shore.
Kelowna Control reported that Phoenix commandeered an Indy vehicle with AA and has been shooting everything in sight." Dom couldn't quite take that in. He had bigger problems that wouldn't let him stop and consider that extraordinary fact. Or that he had a brother fighting ashore. Or that he had a brand new daughter who he hadn't seen yet, and now might never set eyes on. The last thought was the one that brought him instantly alert. He could see Hoffman still kneeling in the bows with his hand to his head for a moment.
"Sir, you okay?"
Hoffman didn't answer.
"Sir?"
"Bytok's gone,"
Hoffman said at last.
"Bastards! What's his wife going to do? His kids?"
There was nothing Dom could say. But Bytok could have been on board now if he hadn't pushed Dom to safety. It was a hard thought to deal with, and Dom knew it would only get harder as the years went by.
"Young's dead."
Timiu was now bailing out the Marlin with Hoffman.
"Shit, we lost half of us. Shim's in a bad way. Where's that frigging Raven?"
Dom joined in, and so did the civvies. He didn't know how long they'd been bailing out when he heard the Raven approaching. He just slumped there, trying to scoop the sea back where it belonged, listening to the Indy civilians talking in hushed voices in a language he didn't understand, until the helicopter was close enough for him to see the crew chief looking down at them through a mist of spray. The water foamed around them in the downdraft. Hoffman was talking to the pilot on his radio, but Dom could only hear Hoffman's side of it. His own comms had packed up.
"It's going to take too long to winch us in one at a time," Hoffman said. "He says they've picked up more Chimeras on their radar. The crazy bastard wants us to dock the Marlin in his cargo bay."
"I'll do it,"
Dom said, not thinking.
"You sure you can manage it?"
"It's that or have them come back and blow us to bits."
Dom wasn't a proper coxswain like Benjafield, but he knew how to drive this thing. He was so tired that he just wanted an end to this, one way or another.
They won't rescue their personnel. They'll just fucking kill them and us with them.
How hard could it be?
Dom realized just how hard when he stood at the helm, watched the Raven land on the water. Yes, it landed. It really sat down on the water and opened its cargo ramp. A Marlin sitting low in the water with water slopping around its deck was a nightmare to steer. Dom managed to get the boat to line up with the cargo bay and tried to gauge the width of the cargo door through salt-smeared glasses. Hoffman handed him his comm headset.
"Just line her up and steer straight," said the crew chief's voice, "and be ready to lift the outboard at the last moment."
Dom's cold-addled brain told him that the rubber bows would buffer a crash if he rammed an internal bulkhead. The Raven seemed to rush at him.
"How's that?"
"Keep coming, hold that course, and speed up."
"You're joking."
"No, you need momentum to mount the ramp. Come on, trust me."
Dom watched Hoffman's shoulders hunch a little, like he was bracing for a crash. And then he went for it. Dom prayed. He didn't do that often. The open mouth of the Raven's cargo hold came at him like a devouring animal, and all he could think of was that if anything went wrong, the last thing he'd see would be Hoffman's hard metal armor neckpiece, which would probably break his nose.
"Throttle back! Throttle back! Throttle back!" the crew chief yelled.
The Marlin hit something hard and smashed down with a loud thud. The stern swung. Yellow shiny figures, crew that Dom hadn't even realized were waiting in the cargo bay, seemed to cling to the bulkheads like flies. Then the boat stopped dead, and Dom almost tipped over the wheel onto Hoffman's back.
"Shit," he said.
The ramp clanged shut behind them, and the Raven lifted, draining seawater across the deck. Dom simply slumped forward on the wheel and rested his forehead on his folded arms, shaking with fatigue.
"Done. Done it. Where's Carlos now? Where's Marcus?"
"Santiago," Hoffman said, slapping his back. "Have you any idea what you achieved tonight?"
Only one thing was left in Dom's mind right then. Asfo Point and Bots and down Chimeras receded into the numb distance.
"Yes, sir," he said. "I've got a daughter."
Asfo Fields. The Asp came to a halt 100 meters from Bernie's position and rolled slowly to a stop, nose first, in the channel. It had been hit 3 times by Indy light armor, and its 10-minute rampage had left nothing on the battlefield that could down a Raven for the time being. Bernie Mataki knew the comparative lull wouldn't last long. Merritt's petrels had hit Parasva and were coming back for a second run. The horizon was orange with flames, a false sunrise. It was time to withdraw.
"Corporal, get out of there. It's done. You got a friggin' Chimera, too."
"Is Carlos back with you?"
She hadn't seen him. He was down by the bridge, and she'd heard him return fire a couple of times, but she couldn't see anything from her position.
"No," she said. "He's still taking potshots out by the bridge."
"Dumb asshole," Marcus muttered. "He doesn't even trust me to shoot up a few cav units on my own."
The hatch opened, and Marcus hauled himself out. Instead of making his way back to the rally point, to the beach, to the landing zone where sea ravens could now land for a brief precious time, he started looking around in the opposite direction. Bernie swore under her breath. Shit, she was never going to get him back here if she didn't drag him away herself.
"Ty, get the stragglers down to the LZ, will you?" she said to Caliso. "Phoenix and Santiago are playing silly buggers. Just make sure that if we're not there in 10 minutes, that the last pilot knows we're alive and want to go home. I don't fancy having to escape across country."
"Yes, Sarge."
"You sure Santiago's still out there?"
"Sure."
"I haven't heard any firing from his position for a few minutes, and he's not been on the radio."
"I bet he's run out of ammo."
But why wouldn't Carlos call for support? Was he really keeping an eye on Marcus?
I'll put my boot up his arse 5 lace holes deep when I get hold of him.
But she knew, even before she said it, that something was wrong. And as soon as she moved, fire started again from the Indy positions. They were still out there, plenty of them. They just didn't have any anti-air capability left. Marcus was going to hear what she said next on the radio, but she couldn't avoid it. She sprinted for the next available cover, a thick mound of grasses, and automatic fire ripped up the ground a few meters from her.
"Carlos," she said. "Carlos, can you make your own way back to the rally point?"
She waited. She had a feeling she knew what the answer would be.
"Negative."
Carlos sounded bad.
"I can't move. I've been hit."
Predictably, Marcus cut right in.
"I'll get you," he said. "Where are you? What the hell happened? Why didn't you call for a medic? For me?"
"Because I knew you'd do this." "Don't, Marcus."
"Shut up! I'm coming."
Marcus was closer to the bridge than Bernie. She saw him scramble up the bank, but as soon as he broke cover, the contact started all over again. Tracer rounds pinpointed him. He dropped flat and kept crawling.
"Shit, he's not going to listen to me."
Bernie switched to the squad frequency. Marcus had a future ahead of him, and the last thing Bernie wanted was for every man and his dog to hear him disobeying orders and making a general dick of himself. He was the perfect gear, except when it came to Carlos. That friendship came before staying alive and following SOPs, and although it hadn't landed either of them in trouble yet, it would. He was going to get himself court-martialed one day if he didn't get a grip on that.
"Phoenix, stay back. That's an order. Roll into the channel and get to the LZ."
"No, Sergeant, I have to go back for him."
"Okay, I better give you a hand." "I'll stick you on a frigging charge."
"So why are you heading this way, too?"
Bernie darted along the edge of the channel, zigzagging and dropping flat every few meters. Marcus was moving along the opposite bank. She was certain he was going to get cut down at any time, but he got within 100 meters of the bridge before the fire was too heavy and he was pinned down. It was then that she decided to take a second or two and check where Carlos was. The scene, framed in the sights of her Lancer, made her stomach lurch. Marcus had to be able to see it, too, if he could get his head up. Carlos was ripped apart. He was lying on his side on the bridge itself, one arm extended as if trying to get up, the other hand clutching his guts. The pool of blood had spread around him. She was amazed he was still conscious. No, she was horrified.
"It's okay, Carlos," she said as calmly as she could. "We're coming, sweetheart. You hang on. We're not leaving you."
"Go back. Don't be so fucking stupid. Leave me."
"Just hang on."
Bernie darted another 20 meters. When she dropped and looked up, Marcus was at about the same point along the bank. Rounds were lifting wet soil all around him. She thought he'd been hit.
"Sarge, just go."
Carlos sounded as if he was going to sob. He was struggling to move his free arm.
"Please, you're going to get killed. I got Jax and his mates killed, too. Marcus, just don't, okay? I'm sorry. I'm sorry I blew it. I didn't think. I let you down."
"You've never let me down. Never. Don't ever say that."
Marcus lifted his body a fraction, but the rounds kept coming.
"Sarge, can you lay down some fire for me?"
Marcus was younger and a hell of a sprinter. Bernie was the better shot. She couldn't argue with the logic.
"Okay, on my signal."
But fire hit the bridge this time. Someone had heard Carlos. He shrieked as if he'd been hit again. Bernie heard Marcus react, not intelligible words, just a terrible animal sound. and she thought she was going to throw up. There was nothing, absolutely nothing, worse than being able to see and hear a wounded buddy and yet not reach him.
"You better look after Dom,"
Carlos panted.
"Marcus, you hear me? You take care of Dom. He's your brother, too. Promise me."
"Stop it," Marcus said. "Just shut up about it. You can take care of him when we get you back."
It was the first time Bernie had ever heard Marcus close to breaking down. He was always so detached. But he was human, and this was his one vulnerability. His buddy. His brother. She put a few bursts in the general direction of fire and got some silence. When she looked back at Carlos, his arm had moved, and he'd managed to reach his belt. He'd been hit in the chest now, top right, just at the point where the pectoral muscle inserted into the shoulder. It was a fresh wound, but it didn't stop him from rummaging in his pouches. It was a slow and labored movement, but she had a good idea what he was trying to do, and she watched him fumble a grenade in one hand.
"Oh, shit. I know you both too well. You and Marcus. Just because you die for each other doesn't mean you have to."
"Carlos, wait," she called. "Hang in there."
Marcus didn't seem to have seen the grenade. Carlos was struggling with the pin.
"We're coming, buddy."
The pool of blood was spreading. It wasn't fair that Carlos was still conscious. He should have passed out from blood loss alone. Bernie cursed.
"For fuck's sake, shoot me, Marcus," Carlos yelled. "I'm not going to make it. I can't move the pin. Shoot me. I'm not letting you get yourself killed for me."
Marcus froze. Bernie thought he was never going to move again.
"Shit. Look at the state of Carlos. Poor bastard. He won't make it even if we can get to him. If Carlos can't do it himself, if Marcus can't, then I will."
"Bullshit,"
Marcus snapped. Carlos's voice was weaker now.
"You're gonna get killed. Go back. Please. I can't let you do it. Get out of here."
Bernie was the section sniper. It was her job. And Marcus would never recover from shooting his best friend. She knew it. Better he hates me than hates himself. She sighted up, setting the reticule of her optics on Carlos's forehead. She was looking at him face on. She wanted him to turn away, and not just because she could hardly bear to look into his eyes. She wanted a clean cranial vault shot. She visualized a line that ran in a band level with his eyes and around the back of his head. A single shot in the back or side of his head would give him instant oblivion. Now she had to try from the front.
Shit. "Carlos, sweetheart, just close your eyes. It's okay."
After a couple of painfully long seconds, Marcus came to life again with his normal no-nonsense voice.
"Cut the crap, Carlos. We're getting you out."
He didn't even pause or ask for her to cover him. He just rose from his knees to a low squat, waiting for the right moment. That was Marcus all over. He was going for it.
"You dumb bastard," Carlos said. "You're the best. Can't let you make a dead asshole of yourself."
And at last, Carlos pulled the pin. Bernie had misjudged how near they were. Debris hit her. Concrete, mud, and the bridge collapsed. Marcus just bellowed. Pure anger and grief. Not even a word. But he kept going. He sprinted for the body. For some reason, as she knelt up and sprayed fire as wide as she could, Bernie found her mind fixed not on the round that was going to kill her, but on what the hell Marcus was going to bring back. She didn't want to look. She just kept firing. The next thing she knew, Marcus was splashing across the channel, and then he was crouched at her side.
"We're going home," he said. "I'm taking Carlos home."
Shoreline Extraction Point, 3 kilometers northeast of Asfo Fields. Bernie Mataki had been a gear since she was 18, 21 years in armor, and she had seen men and women die any number of ways. Sometimes it was quick, and sometimes it wasn't. And sometimes, like Marcus Phoenix, they only died a little, and still carried on moving for years. The Marcus now kneeling on the shoreline waiting for extraction with his best friend's remains wrapped in a bivy sheet wasn't the kid she'd embarked with, and he never would be again. Her radio crackled. "Pomeroy Control to Mataki. Raven inbound to your position. ETA 14 minutes. We're transferring you to Palm. Colonna's dock has her hands full patching up the rest of C Company." "Roger that, Palm." Shit. Pomeroy might have had better facilities than Colonna, but it also had Adam Phoenix on board. She glanced at Marcus to see if he'd heard or taken any notice of it. He showed no signs of reacting.
"Only one serious wounded left here. Lower leg shredded. Lost a bit of blood while we were banging out, but stabilized for the moment. We'll advise the surgeon. Nice job, Tyrans. The bots are home and dry, and most of the Special Forces guys made it."
She had to ask. She couldn't bear to think how Marcus would react to more bad news. They'd all lost close friends that night, and it was going to be hard coming to terms with it, but Marcus had been in the worst position she could imagine. "Yeah, I'd have slotted Carlos, but I didn't. And Marcus was right to try. And nobody else heard, so the matter's closed."
"Dom Santiago," she asked. "Did he make it?" "Damned hero. Rescued some buddies from the water, down to Chimera, and landed a marlin in a Raven's cargo bay. He's gonna get a medal."
Bernie wanted to sob with relief.
"Nobody's spoken to him about his brother yet, have they? Is he a casualty?" "Yeah, afraid so. I don't want Dom finding out from anyone else. Not a damn word, okay? We'll do it. He needs to hear it from us. It's a close regiment."
Yeah, she'd break it to Dom personally. Marcus was in no shape to do it.
"And Major Hoffman?"
"Cleaning his Lancer at the moment, believe it or not. Weird bastard. Pomeroy out." Weird. No, sad. Poor old Vic. Bernie made it her business to know what would make or break the gears under her. Marcus wasn't exactly going back to the bosom of close supportive family. He knelt, one knee drawn up, one arm clasped around it, still frozen in that same position, head down, one hand on what she could only think of as the package. She edged across to him and put her hand on his back. It was good news, but it would only cut him more deeply.
"Marcus," she said, "I just heard Dom made it okay. Did a great job, too."
Marcus didn't say anything for a few moments, or even move a muscle. The remaining 10 men and women from C Company were laying up in the cover of a crumbling cliff, waiting for the Raven to land.
"Yeah, Dom's a natural gear," he said at last.
"I'll tell him it's okay."
"No, it's my job. I'm a Santiago. They always said that. Honorary family."
"You sure?"
Marcus was a big, solid lad, the epitome of a gear. But however hard he looked, he always struck Bernie as damaged. He seemed to be searching for something all the time, something he desperately needed. Approval, acceptance, affection. But whatever it was, he'd had it from Carlos and Dom. Now that Carlos was gone, he seemed to have shrunk to half the size.
"We've been buddies since we were kids," he said. "Him, me, and Dom. I spent more time at their house than I did my own."
"Yeah, you were a lonely kid. It's written all over you."
"I'm sorry, sweetheart.
She couldn't talk to him like a gear any longer. He was just another broken kid at that moment.
I really am.
Marcus lowered his head onto his knee again, and Bernie waited. She expected him to stay like that until the Raven landed, shut off in his own head, and then get up and carry on as he always did. He wasn't the demonstrative type. But his shoulder started shaking, then his whole body, still in complete silence. She realized he was sobbing his guts out. Somehow he managed not to make any sound at all. She wondered how anyone learned to do that, or why they even had to. But eventually the dam burst.
He was my fucking brother.
It was just a whisper, still no obvious tears.
And he's gone. He's really gone. What am I going to do without him?
You're going to be there for Dom, Bernie said. And he's going to be there for you. That's what you're going to do. This regiment's family, Marcus. We're used to getting through this shit, and you and Dom won't be alone.
It was all the harder watching him with his left hand still resting on Carlos's remains. He wasn't the first gear to retrieve his buddy's body in pieces, but there was no way that any human being was ever prepared for that, or could deal with it easily. It wasn't even easy for medics dealing with strangers. It was a nightmare. And we didn't recover Stroud. Shit. It's all the things you don't think about until it happens. Poor Anya. Another kid going through hell now.
Would you have fired?
Marcus asked at last.
Too bloody right I would. I was sighted up on him, but he got there first.
Bernie wasn't sure if that would make Marcus feel worse or better. Maybe he'd take it as a rebuke for making Carlos pull the pin to stop him trying to reach him.
And I'd expect anyone else to do the same for me. I let him die. No, you bloody well didn't.
Bernie picked her way carefully through a minefield of wrong things to say, and opted for the least dangerous one that happened to be true.
Carlos was a good bloke, a bloody good bloke, but he got himself in that shit. He should have stayed put and not tried to take the vehicle the second time, and the others were crazy to follow him. That won't make you feel any better, but you're not to blame for any of them dying. He did it himself.
He was a fucking hero.
You were both heroes. He fragged himself to stop you from getting shot up. You were ready to die to save him. What can possibly matter more than that?
But I should have stopped him. I should have gone out and dragged him back after Jakovs got hit. I should have got to him first before I charged off in the asp. I should have known better. I'm supposed to know better, aren't I?
Marcus, you were on your way out to drag him clear when he pulled the frigging pin. You'd have been killed before you even reached him. Suicidal rescues are for movies.
I hesitated and he died.
It was just timing, and it was Carlos not wanting you to die for him.
Shit, it was getting harder by the second. Marcus wiped his nose on the back of his hand.
This is going to destroy Dom.
Maybe I better tell him after all.
What exactly do we tell him?
And now they had to deal with another immediate problem. Bernie knew how families reacted to KIAs. When they said they wanted to know if their loved ones had suffered or gone clean, they really didn't know what the answer was going to do to them. Some could take it, some couldn't. But they sure as shit didn't need to be told that their son or brother or father had been killed because he did something stupid and took comrades with him. Closure could heal, but nothing was going to bring back the dead. Hard facts were best kept for the historians, revealed long after anyone living could be hurt. Dom didn't need to know at all, and neither did the families of the others. Not this time.
Tell him that his brother was a bloody hero, she said at last, because he was. He put your life first, and he blew that bridge. And Dom has to go on living, the poor sod.
Yeah, Marcus said, still staring at his hand.